listening to Beside Stillwater's Netcast, a tabernacle service of Stillwater's home churches and worship center.
And I think with the scriptures this week, how we can kind of sum this up is women and children first. Because in the Jewish culture, they were, don't get me wrong, women and children were prized, but they were not their own. They were not thought of to be a little more than just property. And so, in Proverbs 31, when it's talking about this woman, it's really sort of a feminist understanding in a culture that didn't prize that very highly. And the other scriptures talk that where Jesus is talking about children, they were the least, they were the smallest. And it seems to me that when we understand God from that perspective, we get it right. If we understand God from a position of power, as if power is something to be gained, and we seek out to fulfill his kingdom work by force and by making a name for ourselves and being something, then we fail. We not only fail God, but we fail what he's made us to be. And the larger context of that is that we fail the world because the world got so far off base from what he had, from what God had intended. And Jesus comes along as a cultural correction, and we see places in Scripture where this bubbles up, that this was always God's intent. Normally through the voice of the prophets or the Psalms. You see it embedded in the Word, the Torah. You see it embedded in the law. But for some reason, even though we have all those vivid understandings, we miss it. And we don't understand what God is really saying. Because we seek greatness rather than seeking to be the servant. Go ahead.
Living as an artist, to me, really means really coming alive to God's story. As you read the scripture, we see this unfolding narrative of God revealing the wonder of who he is and calling his people into the stewardship of the raw stuff of creation, making culture. And so to live artistically is really to say I'm an image of God. Whether that means I'm an artist, as a vocational song maker, whether someone's setting the table. For my
I thought it was interesting that something I never stopped to consider is that in the new world, when we have a new heaven and a new earth, that the revelation of Jesus talks about how the glory of the nations, you know, the art, the artistry, the beauty that was created in secular governments, secular nations, is going to be brought in to the heavenly kingdom when it's fully realized. Not the kingdom that we're in right now that's throughout the world, but it hasn't it's here, but it hasn't been realized in its fullness yet. When it does, beauty is going to be brought in. Beauty from every culture that you can think of. If it's truly beautiful, if it's truly merciful, if it's truly goodness, is not going away. Whether it was created by somebody who professed Christ or not, and cultures will be represented, because by and large our understanding of Jewishness and Christianity and even Islam are all imported religious practices that were happening prior to the Abrahamic promise, and it was part of even the fact that Abraham built an altar. That's not something that was handed down from God, it was something borrowed. Altars existed in other religions and pagan religions. And what the sacrifices meant and why you would build an altar is to appease gods. Because your world was out of control. When we were talking from Psalm 1, the advice of the wicked, and when we talk about this woman in Proverbs 31, what she's doing is she's ordering her house. She's ordering the way she does things, and she's putting things into order. And there is a beauty about what it is that she's doing. And in Psalm 1, the confusion that comes with the advice from the wicked, we are around that constantly. We call it drama, don't we? And if we take the advice, if we play into the thinking of this world, what we will have is disorder. Now, what he was saying in that film, he started off with that we are image bearers of God. And we are. We're made in His image and in His likeness. And what we've sidestepped, what we've stepped away from, is being that image bearer in order to have our own glory. My wife hates when I do this, but in Psalm 31, that's all I can see is her. She has willing hands. She works hard. She gets up early. She provides food, not only by cooking it, but going out and earning the money for it. She works and then comes home and works some more. She's up late, attending to our kids, making sure Chelsea has what she needs at college, doing whatever she needs to do. Something that's tucked away in here is that something that I never really took notice of before is that her husband is known in the city gates, taking his seat among the elders of the land. The city gates is where decisions get made. Eldership and things like that, or the older people who guide things. And what we have truly in Pottstown is what, from what I can tell, which we didn't have years ago, is we have surrounding the shelter, we have truly, I think, what we could call true elders. Every church has elders. and they have deacons because they think that that's biblical, but that's not what the Bible's talking about. Elders were the spiritual leaders at the city gate, the ones who made decisions and prayed. And to be an elder didn't mean that you were an elder over your little small denomination or over your little small church body. You know, there weren't Stillwater's elders if there was a Stillwater's church, which to their ears would probably be profane too. But what it meant was that there were a body of believers that looked over the city, leading, praying, caring about spiritual needs. And what's interesting in Psalm 31 is this guy, I'm convinced at this point, at least from my own life, that the only reason that he's able to take his seat at the city gate is because things are well at home. He has far less to worry about because he has a surety there. Now Christ goes on. That's the way me and Missy's marriage is. When I read this, you know, our kids are smiling. They're joyful because of her. And we sat up last night and we goofed around. And we have a Psalm 31, at least as close as I can imagine. We have a Psalm 31 house. And it's because of what she does. Now, in Jewish culture, she would have been considered property. So even writing this in the Proverbs by a guy who really didn't think very highly of women, because he had concubines and lots of wives, Solomon, this shows up in his writings. And it's an example of, it's an example of the last being first and the first being last. God's order of doing things. They went on from there and passed through Galilee. He did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him. 3 days later, after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand. They didn't understand what he was saying, and they were afraid to ask him. Then they came to Capernaum, Jesus' hometown. And when he was in the house, he asked them, What were you arguing about along the way?" But they were silent. For on the way, they had argued with one another who was the greatest. He sat down and called the 12 and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them. And taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child and my name welcomes me. And moreover, welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." Now, that's Jesus shaking up the order, isn't it? Because these guys are arguing, and just remember where we've been. They called Peter, called him the Christ. He said, I believe in you. I believe that you are the anointed one. I believe you are the one that was to come. And he says, you know what? You're right. And on that statement, I'll build my church. It's like a boulder. And he said, you know what? You're little and small, like a little stone. You're Peter, and you're movable. But on what you said, that's immovable. That is huge. And on that rock, I will build my church. And then Peter goes on to say, Jesus is talking about his death. And he says, never let that be said. We'll die for you. We won't let that happen. And Peter gets all indignant with Jesus. And Jesus, after saying glorious things to him about how right his statement is and all of that, Jesus turns around and says, get behind me, you Satan. You don't even have in mind the things of God. Because I think Peter was thinking militaristic. He was thinking, like, somehow we have to grow strong. We have to be powerful. We have to have everything going for us. And then, if we have everything going for us, then we can pull stuff off. If we only had a lot of money, we'd be able to get some things done. You know what? If only we had a bigger church, we could make some political alignments and we could get things done. And we'd get noticed. Do you know any churches that are like that? Big, big, big. Got to have their name on everything. Got to have the limelight. Got to be noticed. Well, Jesus' guys are having that argument. Peter goes through that, and Jesus rebukes him and calls him the Satan. And he says, get behind me. You don't have in mind the things of God. And now here, he's saying it again. He goes home. And these guys are arguing along the way. And you know what they're not doing? They're not doing the smartest thing that they could do. They could go to him and they could say, Jesus, what did you mean? And in typical rabbi fashion, you know what? The things that he says are eliciting a response. He's begging his guys to ask him questions. He's begging for them to get engaged. He's begging for them to say, Jesus, please explain that even further to me. I really don't have a handle on what you're saying. But what are they doing? They're pretending that they already know. And that's based in fear because, you know, they would give themselves away if they would say, Jesus, I don't get it. And so they're arguing with themselves. Now this has become, you know, an argument amongst them. Now you know what? I think I ought to be first. After all, he said he'll build his church on me. And maybe another one said, well, he called me a son of thunder. Maybe that's a good thing. No, I don't think so. You know, and there's all these arguments that are going on, and Jesus lets them go. And he gets back to the house. And he sits down. He says, what were you guys arguing about? And they confess. We're arguing about who's going to be the greatest. You see, there's a conflict between the conquering lion, who the Messiah is, and the Paschal Lamb, the Passover Lamb, the sacrifice. The Lamb, the weak little thing. Conquering lion with the teeth, Paschal Lamb, meek, weak, small. See, the cross throws everything into question. And it's what they're not ready to even face. Because they think Messiah is the guy who will deliver them from the empire. and put them back on the trajectory that they think is God's trajectory, which is to be a player in the world, to be big, to be strong, to have a name, to have an army, to have the biggest temple, to have the biggest whatever. And Jesus takes a little child and places it among them and lays hands on the child, squeezes him, says, "This is who you have to be." Darren and I were talking before the service, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying when we were making announcements and about prayer, about taking it seriously, that we won't find the ugly things that God makes beautiful if we have our eyes closed. We won't even comprehend who God is to help us see that if we don't understand a couple things. One of them being the Our Father. That's what we were talking about. That was something that was foreign to them. Remember a few weeks ago we talked about Jesus said, "And call no one Father, because you have one Father." Right? Don't call anyone teacher because you have one teacher. Remember that? Well, see, with those titles, what that really means is it means don't call anyone doctor. Don't call anyone professor. Don't call anyone rabbi. Don't call anyone pastor. Because they're titles that people attach to their names to be seen by men. It's grandeur. We have a saying here, which is, when we give somebody a title, we make them a hat. Because that's what the church has done. It's taken very simple things, the gifts to the church, the personalities that are gifts to the church. The personality of the guy who is the prophet. The guy who will speak for God even though it's not popular. The guy who you just can't get to shut up. The guy who sees injustice and can't let it alone. That's not a title. It's who he is. A pastor teacher, a hyphenated word, a pastor teacher is somebody who teaches somebody by what they do. They shepherd them. They show somebody that if Ron is going to pastor me in working on my bike, he's going to get his hands dirty. He's going to say, "Now, Cork, hold the screwdriver right there. And now turn that a couple turns, and you'll see that move? Oh, okay. Now go to the other side and adjust that screw the same amount, and you see now your tire's in line." And he will shepherd me. He will pastor teach me how to tighten my chain. You see, what we've done is we've entitled people and we've given them hats. Big glorious hats, giant hats. Cardinal this and pastor that and we celebrate them when really what they are is they are the last in the church. Because everybody should be one of those gifts. An apostle is a guy with a message. He's a letter carrier. He's a message bringer. He's not a guy with a hat. So this simple work that we do is impossible to even grasp at when we're thinking in terms of in human terms, where we think we have to be powerful and big. When we say the Our Father, that was unheard of because we don't call anybody doctor. We don't acknowledge people as being celebrated and glorious and grand and call them president. We have one president, and he's Jesus. So when Jesus is talking about how do we pray, and he says, Our Father, God was considered unapproachable. And Jesus says, and instructing them how to pray, he says, call him Dad, who art in heaven. And the way we hear that as Americans is we hear God, who is really far away. But the idea of heaven, the kingdom of heaven, is arrived. The kingdom of heaven is here. When it talks about heaven, the Jewish mind even had levels, like immediately the air surrounding us is the heavens. And that's like, you know, the atmosphere, our atmosphere, that's part of the heavens. And then there's the outer space, there's what's beyond our atmosphere, and that's considered the heavens. And so when Jesus is saying, he's saying to a Jewish hearer who thinks God is distant and far away and understands that atmosphere, that the air surrounding us is right here immediately, that that's part of the heavens, he's saying call him Dad. And when you do call him Dad, realize he's this close. He's right here. So our Dad, who is right here with us, is the idea that he's getting at. And that helps us understand. If we understand that he really is Father, and if we understand that we are children, and that Jesus stands us in the midst of the powerful, the money grubbers, the ones who will hurt you, the ones that take advantage of you, the ones that make you cry at night, the ones that make you tired, the ones that you hear all the political rhetoric and you think there's no way to get to the end of that. And then you go back to Psalm 1 and you understand, why are things so out of control? Because it's the advice of the wicked. And every voice is vying to be heard. But if I understand God's path, if I understand what it means to be a child, if I understand what it means to be small, and how Jesus celebrates that, how small you are, when you're the servant of everybody, rather than one being served, how he prizes that. If we only understood that, then we would see the beauty of Proverbs 31. We'd see how much this woman actually is prized by God. You will see how, although she might not be perfect, she has taken a family and made something beautiful. And that's what we're called to do. Our simple work is being the servant. A couple weeks ago, we talked about what it really means, what true religion is to take care of orphans and widows. That's hard work. And now this week, James goes on to say, who is wise and understanding among you? Wisdom. Show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness, born of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be boastful and false to the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will also be disorder and wickedness of every kind. But the wisdom that comes from above is pure and peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace for those who make peace. These conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? You want something and you don't have it, so you commit murder. I gotta say it. Think of the retaliation for 3,000 lives lost in New York. How much blood we are responsible for. That far exceeds 3,000 lives. We want oil, so we'll justify murder. You want something and you don't have it, so you commit murder. And you covet something and cannot obtain it, so you engage in disputes and conflicts. You do not have because you don't ask. You ask and you don't receive because you ask wrongly in order to spend what you get on your own pleasures. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he'll flee from you. Draw near to God, and he'll draw near to you. Our Father, who is right here, waiting for us to draw near. For me, that's the definition of simple love. Being a child, being uncorrupt, unpowerful, another thing that Darren and I were talking about is maybe our church is perfect. Maybe smallness is just what God ordered. And I mentioned one will send 1,000 to flight and two will send 10,000 to flight. So what we have, as Jesus talks about his death and reassurance of resurrection, they are defiled by wanting to be big and strong. And he's saying, no, we're going to win this by being weak and frail. And I am going to die. But because I die, it'll prove. It'll show evil for what it is. It will end the need for you to sacrifice anymore. And so through that, being the Paschal Lamb, and at the same time, being the conquering lion, conquering sin and death, being raised, not out of power, not out of I've gotten enough friends, or I have enough money, or I've climbed my way to the top, and now I can dictate he does it from this position of weakness as a child and invites us along to that. And if we truly embrace that and understand that and see that that is the trajectory of God, what is the evidence of that in our midst? The evidence is that there are churches in Washington that want to do what we do. Now, if we were doing this out of our excess and out of our abundance, you know, there are lots of churches that have it's a drop in the bucket for them to do what we do. But they won't. Because budgets need to be served. The one thing that I think that God has done with us, if we are not to be a big church, is that he has given us at least a sound vision that in our smallness, in our frailty, it gives us credibility. It shows God for who he is, and it shows the world for what it is. And it gives us a voice. It gives us a voice in Washington, D.C. It gives us a voice in Bucks County now. It gave us a voice in Kenya. It gives us a voice because when we are weak, we're strong. The apostles didn't get it. They thought the way you win is by having more, having bigger, and being powerful. James calls that devilish. And he also says that it's true wisdom to not run after that stuff, but to be small and to be the servant. If I'm in the company of pastors with big church buildings and lots of education and titles and all of that, I feel like shimp. But when I get with the scriptures and I crack it open and I read it, and I see my wife, and I see our family, and I see our church, and I see the things that are being done that are just exactly the same things that Jesus talked about. Who would want to settle for a freaking title?
Have been listening to Beside Stillwater's netcast. For more information about Stillwater's and its ministries, please visit besidestillwaters.net.